Swedish.
The blondie.
Yeah.
And Shazza.
Oh, man. You guys are so creepy.
Yeah. Welcome to the Futile Podcast. Tonight, we got...
Malcolm.
Michael.
And Ian. And the fact that we have Malcolm and Michael means we have to talk anime, because that's all they know. They're really, like, nerdy. It's kind of creepy. This place smells. I'm at their place now. No, just kidding. They're not what you would think of when you think of anime crazy people. Mm-hmm. Which is nice.
I'm not an anime crazy person.
No.
You're so
no, bad. No, she doesn't have cat ears. She doesn't have cat ears on. Her hair isn't dyed green.
We haven't gotten to that stage.
Yeah, you hadn't then. Don't let it happen.
But he totally looked up all these videos on Crispin Freeman online.
Oh, weird. Okay.
I just wanted to see what the, you know...
The actual guy. He's like a soap opera actor or something, right?
He kind of looks like he could be one.
Yeah, I think he is. Yeah.
You kind of would assume, like, they're all ugly, like, fat, gross people that have these amazing voices. And that's why they're doing anime.
I don't know. But I kind of don't like seeing what the people look like, because you don't want to ever think of them with an actual person sitting there with, like, headphones on.
No, I didn't want to until I finished... When I finished Helsing, I was like, okay, now it's okay to pull back the curtain and see who's doing there.
Oh, okay, I suppose, yeah. So you watched the old Helsing, the 13-episode
mm-hmm.
show that ends sort of in the middle of the whole story with, what's the name of the guy that he keeps yelling? I want to say it's Gambino, but that's not...
Incognito.
Right. Incognito! And that's like the only time when like the stakes are raised, and he's like, run away, police girl! Right?
Yeah.
And he's like, you have to leave.
Mm-hmm.
That's not even in the manga.
Yeah, I mean, they had to change it a little, right? Because the manga kept going, and then the show kind of didn't get funds, but now they're doing the OAV that mm-hmm. is more based on the manga.
Yeah.
I have to admit, I think I like the OAV a little better, because they do more with the Alucard character
mm-hmm.
in the OAV. I mean, like, it's like third episode. He's like walking into Rio in that hotel room and stuff, and I'm like, that's a little cooler than just him turning into weird stuff and being able to decimate anybody anytime he wants to. I mean, in the original series, there was almost no real stakes for the character. It was just like, he'd just kick up his vampire power a little higher and take care of everything. And
the new one's definitely better.
I think so. I mean, I've seen the first, I think it's the first four that I've seen with all the Nazi stuff and all that stuff.
Yeah, that's all that's out right now.
Yeah, and then, I mean, they release those kind of slowly sometimes, or quickly, then slowly, or who knows what.
Well, the problem was that Genion went under.
Yes.
So they were waiting for someone to...
That's tough. Yeah, did Funimation end up buying them or something? Funimation. They bought everybody, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that happened with Black Lagoon, too. Black Lagoon Season 2. That was rough. I really wanted to get that. I finally got it. So, you like it, Helsing, then?
Oh, yeah. I really like it, yeah. Like the Alucard character.
And the setting being in England instead of in America or Japan kind of makes it something different.
Yeah, a little bit different flavor to it.
All the actors are doing British accents and stuff. Instead of just American accents, even though they're in Japan. Why wouldn't they? That's always the interesting question, right? Is it's like, well, you're just sounding like an American here, but when do you decide to sound foreign, you know?
Yeah, that's interesting. It's a huge Western.
I had a problem with it, and I'm not sure what it was all about. In the first season of the Ghost in the Shell TV show, they go to England in an episode, and almost none of the people in authority have English accents. So it was almost like, but it could be a historical thing, like maybe some shit happened in World War Five, non-nuclear World War Four, or whatever they had happened in that show.
Yeah.
So, vampire stuff, you like it? You like when they bring the priest in? With his,
all the characters are pretty cool. And I like old shows where they have to, that turntable's kind of handy, where they have to,
take it with me.
We have to face off with these different villains, which is common in anime, I guess.
The shonen stuff is the biggest for that. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I guess that's the name of the magazine where a lot of the longer running, like Dragon Ball Z and Bleach and Naruto, where it's basically just like, I have to train and get stronger to fight the guy that embarrassed me and beat me up. And then I get stronger and I beat him, but then I realize that he was just the mere, you know, underling to the big guy. And it's a constant cycle. And there's a lot of transformations that happen in some of them, too, you know? You turn into the next level physically and mentally and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, Helsing follows a degree of that, you know. There's
yeah.
There's It seems like there's this whole angle where they're like creating like artificial vampires with chips or something.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that takes down the entire Helsing organization at one point, right?
Yeah, they get in and murder all the Helsing people.
That episode always bothered me, but...
Why? Because they kill everybody?
Well, yeah, because they, like, it's, you know, it's the Helsing organization. They just, like, so easily, like, storm the castle. It seems like they were totally unprepared for it.
It's a numbers game, though. That's sort of the same thing that in the second season, the Ghost in the Shell, like their main villain, and it's a very complicated season, but it mentions like their greatest weakness is numbers, just faced against overwhelming odds.
Yeah.
You know, if like an actual like army battalion came after the 10 of you guys, who are elite when you're doing your thing surreptitiously in the shadows, and you know you've got the distance and you've got like your sniper rifle trained on somebody or you've hacked somebody's brain, but so the same sort of for the Helsing organization, it's this weird kind of clandestine group, and so you send in a couple boatloads of reverse engineered robo cyborg vampires or whatever, and they're going to catch them with their pants down, and that's kind of what happens, right?
Right.
Yeah,
it's a couple busloads, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, then they turn all the Helsing people into...
Yeah, turns them.
Mm-hmm.
So really, it's just Walter Alucard.
Walter with his monofilament.
Victoria. Yeah, monofilament, is that what you call it?
The monofilament wire that you use to slice people in half and stuff. Yeah, that's a big anime thing, too. That cyberpunk thing, a lot of things. It was in Johnny Mnemonic.
Right. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Alucard's cool. I mean, it's kind of... And even in that episode, he doesn't even come out and really fight anybody until he fights the dude in white.
Yeah, he just sort of... That guy's just like a punk, too, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, it takes a while in the first series... it's really just like, you know, Incognito is like the first guy that's any real challenge to him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that's kind of a problem... on some level. I mean, I guess it's more about the policewoman, it's more about the girl, really. She's more the main character, but her personality is kind of hard to get behind because she's sort of kind of dumb but also just kind of like doesn't know what's going on and
doesn't want to drink the blood, therefore she's getting weak.
Yeah. I forget how the OAV, if they deal with that stuff quicker or just more, because it seems like maybe just the storytelling, or with the Nazis and stuff, that it becomes more exciting on a bigger scale, and you just kind of care less whether or not the vampire's got a big challenge or not.
Everything's bigger on the OVA. I mean, the violence is amped way up.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
The animation is way better. And
cool.
So,
but if it's based on the manga, does that have a finish, right? For that one, you think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it will presumably have a conclusion and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the biggest thing,
honestly.
The most frustrating thing is when it's the animes that are based on a book series or a manga, and it's like, hey, you chose to tell one component of the story and then rush through a bunch of the other stuff and then just leave me confused and frustrated and left with a giant cliffhanger. It's like, really?
And then they go back and redo it. Like the Full Metal Alchemist, how they had to, like, go beyond the books because the books...
Yeah. I didn't have a problem with that one because... I mean, I haven't seen Brotherhood yet, but... it works as a story.
Yeah.
It's more an issue of, like something like Eternity Blood or Claymore, where it's just like, it just ends and there's more to tell, and maybe if they get another season, they'll
do it. Well, the problem with Eternity Blood was that the author died.
I guess. I thought that they had plenty more books to draw on from stories, but maybe there was no conclusion to the book, so if that happened...
I thought he died, and that's why they had to end it. They were like,
sorry. But we're not talking about those anymore. We talked about those on our last one a little bit.
Yeah, we did.
We talked about the idea of being frustrated with certain anime, but we have two that are not as frustrating, depending. I'm loosely connected. They both have airships in them. They both have exciting airship music, which always makes me want to move my arms like Brack on the Brack Show. If anyone's familiar with the Brack Show, or if I'm showing my age by mentioning the Brack Show. Yeah, so you guys just watched Escaflowne. Or no, you didn't just watch it now. I mean, you've been plowing through some stuff, huh?
Yeah.
And what'd you think of that?
I like it because it's kind of that golden era of anime.
Yes, it is. It's 95, I think.
Do everything by hand. Yeah.
It's probably one of the oldest like anime series. It's like an anime series, maybe, that's like a 26 episodes.
Yeah.
Solid music. pretty solid character designs, though I have issue with some of them. I mean, it's got super pointy noses, which are sometimes kind of off-putting.
Oh, yeah.
And the main female protagonist kind of looks like a dude. She's very tomboyish.
Oh,
which makes it
short hair?
Not even just the short hair, just her features and stuff. She just... She doesn't really have, like, a lot of femininity to her, necessarily. Yeah. And that's not... I mean, maybe that's not really what the story's about, but the story kind of is about that, because there is this soap opera romance love triangle.
Oh, yeah.
It's just harder to buy that when you've got these, like, princess-looking women that are much more feminine.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm a dude. I'm not watching it for that. Mm-hmm. I'm watching it despite that. I'm watching it because... It's got these interesting sort of almost medieval mecha designs, which I think are very cool. And like you said, it's the old 90s animation style where they had to like draw the stuff. And you know, I could care less about the cat girls and all that other garbage. I really just want to see some airships fly around. And some awesome violent stuff happen.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty cool. It's almost like the main character, what was her name?
Hitomi,
yeah. She was kind of like, yeah, whatever. You know, do your little telefuture thing.
But, yeah, let the pendulum swing.
Yeah, but the coolest part was really, you know, the battles between Vaughn and...
Delando. Lovely.
Yes, the insane one.
Yeah, there always used to be, like, some insane kid.
And then his brother, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
Vulcan.
It was a little weird when I was like, no, Delando is actually...
A girl! Oh.
Yeah.
Well, wait, did that get transgendery at some point?
Yeah,
like, did he transform from a boy to a girl, or was he always a girl?
Alan's sister was kidnapped, and they were doing experiments on little children.
Oh,
they
yeah.
made her a boy.
Yeah, I've seen the show, I think, all the way through sort of twice, but it's been a little bit. I remember, I like it well enough. I don't know if I'll ever watch it again, but there are a couple of places where it's really good. A couple of places, some of the music is really, really good. The darker music when they show, like, the strange cyberpunk meta, or steampunky megapolis that the bad guy has made.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
His crazy telescope thing.
Sure,
some of that, some of that stuff is visually very cool, but kind of like thematically not as fully realized as I would like, so you're kind of always left with a little bit of a head scratch happening.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Character behavior, for the most part, I mean, you're right, like the Hitomi character is kind of like, I don't care.
Yeah, it's a little high school drama.
They do a little more with Vaughn, and he becomes more interesting. Mm-hmm. Kind of just, I mean, you've got the whole emo thing, but who cares? I mean, he's angry because he's this sort of prince half-breed, all this other
right.
stigma on him, and all of these things he's trying to prove and trying to accomplish.
Yeah. I don't know. I like the animation style, but I like the pointy noses.
Yeah, I mean, like, Macross Plus and stuff has some of those. I think, it doesn't entirely bother me.
Yeah.
Just sometimes. And for the most part, yeah, the style is good.
Mm-hmm.
All the fight sequences were pretty cool.
Yeah, the fight sequences are staged.
And I liked how Vaughn, like, fused with his machine and everything. And
the interface of the machine is cool.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The weird kind of gross organic way where it, like, is powered by, like, dragon hearts, and you rip them out of the dragon and it's all gross. And
yeah.
Some of the locations are interesting, like that mine. It's sort of like the halfway point when the show kind of turns.
The mine.
There's, like, some kind of quarry or some rock pit thing.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, when they're having that battle.
Yeah, they have a big battle, and then, like, everything, like, the whole stakes change, and the show kind of... I mean, and it gets into the politics and stuff, which is somewhat interesting. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if I put this in the upper echelon of my favorite anime shows.
Yeah.
It's hard, in some sense, because of the style of the animation, because of the fights, because of the music and stuff. I really do like it, but at the same time, the story-wise, it just...
Yeah. Basically,
maybe it would have been better if it had been condensed or something. It could have been focused into, like, a 13 or something.
There was enough to hold me there, but a lot of the storyline was kind of like the whole, like, fate optimization machine, like where they were trying to make fate, like, this scientific process was kind of hokey and, like...
Well, it was just like it was never quite fully realized into what it was trying to do. You know,
No. It
was trying to be too clever, too elusive or mysterious.
Right.
And at a certain point, it's like, you know what? You're a cartoon that's talking about imagined stuff. Just, like, invent some crap and let's move on. You know,
yeah.
Like, what's really going on with this old guy and stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the unique things about Escaflowne is that it's not based on a manga, and I'm not sure if that sort of is why the storyline isn't quite as developed as most other animes, but...
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, usually, and I don't know how many shows are like that, but I mean, Bebop's not based on a manga. Yeah. And it's really good, but you're all, but it's also kind of maybe not as well realized in places. Who knows? No, I mean, it's realized well enough, and it has a conclusion. It doesn't feel like it's open-ended. I don't know. I guess it's just, maybe it's a genre thing with me, where if there's like this intrigue, but it's medieval, I don't know, you're waiting for the king to get assassinated, and you're waiting for, like, the king that's ostensibly going to be a good guy eventually. How many episodes is he going to, like, hold them hostage while he's trying to work out that whether he can trust the bad guys or not, and then eventually realizes that he can't, and then... I mean, some major stuff does happen. I mean, like, some characters feel guilty about things that happen, you know. Yeah. Bad stuff happens and people get hurt, and people have to grow up a little bit and stuff, so... Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty fair show.
It is, and I think it's sort of like it's a fair show as far as the storyline goes, but what bumps it up higher is, like you said, the music, the animation, and all those things kind of make it, raise it up a
little. Yeah, it's got that, it gets bogged down. I mean, maybe the pacing is a problem for me, because it's like, once they get into that airship, and like, they kick on the airship music, and it's like, in adventure mode, they pretty much promptly then go land the airship, and they're at like this castle for a few episodes. So it's kind of, they deflate it, and then they get it exciting again, and then they kind of deflate, and then they do some episodes with like flashback stuff and like guys walking through the snow, and that's kind of cool. But, and maybe that's about where you would put that part of the story to kind of take a breather. But yeah, I mean, I think that would have been my chief issue with it, is that there's that part about a third of the way into it where, like, one of those creatures that can change his shape or something has infiltrated a kingdom and is wreaking some havoc, and it's kind of like, I'm not as interested in that part as I am in, like, let's just get back in the air and let's get some stuff happening.
Yeah.
And I would have liked to honestly have seen more with the sort of dark steampunky kingdom, you know, more from the bad guys, more from the villains and stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of like you just got these really brief glimpses.
Yeah, you got to see some of that stuff.
The guy peering into his telescope and like, oh, I see it all. Optimize the fate.
Yeah, and exactly.
Then, you know, cut back to SF flight machines.
So yeah, so it was a little trippy, but like I said, I don't know. But the other one that you've seen,
mm-hmm.
and that I've seen multiple times, that does not stimp on the airship adventure, was Last Exile. One of my all-time favorite shows.
All-time favorites, really?
Oh, yeah, it's got to be in my top 25,
really?
Easily. Probably in my... Maybe, I don't know if it'll be in my top 10. Every time mm-hmm. Every now and again, something new comes along, and it has to readjust everything.
It's the airships, isn't it?
That's are you fucking kidding me? Those airships are awesome. It's the pacing too. Honestly, that show is it's even when it has like slower episodes where it's like just like a lot of plot is happening and like intrigue and like stuff is going on, but nothing is really happening in terms of action. It's still in the air. It's still like they're on an airship, and there's, you know, there's these sounds and these sights, and it's just, it's cool. Yeah, I mean, Last Exile to me has got, which is why it's funny that the Anime News Network has the first four episodes available online for the streaming, because basically that'd be such an incredible hook. And I could say to someone that did want to check the show out there, like, just to see if they liked it, that at the end of the fourth episode, you're going to want to see more.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't disappoint. It's not a show that I feel like is good for six episodes and then gets meandering and then rushes to a conclusion or anything. It's pretty much good the whole way through.
Yeah.
Because once that fourth episode ends with the awesome, like, hero entrance and one of the coolest things ever, it pretty much just keeps going. And it's like three straight episodes of dogfights, like, and action. And then it has an AB story involving a race in a cave with like with an auction, and that's all exciting. It's all paced so well. It's all structured so well.
Yeah.
I mean, the story just doesn't lag. I mean, it starts with a fleet battle.
But here's my question: what was that guy's name? The Johnny Young Bosch character.
Klaus. The main character.
What is his big womanizing draw that all the women are madly in love with?
That is an interesting point later on in the show, isn't it?
I know that was a thing.
I remember when I was watching the episode where where the princess kind of goes at him. I was like, that's going to happen here in a second, isn't it? I'm like, I don't know why that happened, but I felt like that should have happened then. And I mean, I don't know.
I like this weird scene where he's like staring at her boobs. Like,
yeah, well, that was later on. That was after.
After the kiss
and after.
Well, especially if she's into.
I think that was like that was a pretty clear like moment of transference, you know, where it was just like she wanted Alex.
So she was leaving.
And she had felt kind of dejected, but she saw something similar in him and just needed a moment of tenderness or something. And I didn't see it as anything, like, more than that, as anything particularly sexual, yeah. Intensely sexual, at least. And then the thing with, with Tatiana was more everyone else's inference.
Yeah.
They all thought something happened when they were out there and, you know...
She's the
ace pilot.
Right.
That was shaken.
She was jealous a few times
angry. Lavi was jealous.
Lavi was jealous, but so was Tatiana.
Tatiana, I think, was a little confused and kind of angry at Klaus, but also the simple fact was that at that point in the show, it not only had he sort of shown that he's kind of a man and he's like, you know, going to solve problems, and while she's kind of had this moment of the first time she's ever really failed and scared and doesn't know what to do, he kind of like just wakes up finally and says, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to solve some problems here.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know. I mean, you can see that sort of weird kind of survivor bonding happened there, I guess.
And then there's the long haired chick.
Yeah, then there's Miss, what was her name?
She's like the bitchy one the whole time.
No, she was always really nice. Yeah. She was the co-pilot. She was the navigator.
Yeah, she was our navigator.
Yeah.
Okay.
She was the navigator.
Right.
You're thinking of Tatiana.
Yeah, okay.
Tatiana was the bitchy one.
Right, I was confusing.
The navigator was always really, yeah.
She was always like, Tatiana, why are you such a bitch?
Yeah. Alice.
Alice.
Yeah. No, there was nothing really anything there, though. I mean, he was just nice to her.
I think it's one of these situations where you work in an office, you see, and everyone is horrible looking, but, you know, this is the limited pool of people you have to deal with. So, you know, within their
flight
circle, he's the new guy, and he's, like, in their
same age. He's not a scuzzy, old, creepy, mechanic.
He's the old womanizing mechanics. Yeah.
And they're kind of pining after Alex.
Yeah.
And he's the new one, and he's just a nice guy that's kind of too dumb to know any better.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've had to deal with that before. No.
It's one of these situations.
Just like, I'm just trying to be chivalrous. That doesn't mean anything, okay? Please. Oh my gosh. Yeah, no, I mean, that angle on the whole show is pretty minimal, though.
Yeah.
I mean, really, it's awesome airships and awesome stuff happening. And the characters are cool, and you can get behind them and be excited by what they do. I mean, just all Klaus wants to do is just know what's going on. I mean, it's a world where the design of the world is so craggly, and the geography, topography is such that there's not a lot of travel that's happening by land. So they've developed through their imaginary technology of this Claudia, which allows them to harness steam power and all of that to basically all their commerce and all of their activity is happening through airships. So what happens in the sky is basically what happens in the world, how things communicate between the two primary forces on terrestrial forces, which are the Disith Empire and the Norkia Kingdom or whatever.
Which the entire ending was totally confusing to me.
Yeah, the ending was a little confusing.
Yeah,
I think at one point we were like, I have no idea what just happened.
Yeah.
Well, the Grand Stream is like this confluence of
air currents. I thought it was a triangle, like of the sky or something.
Well, in an odd way, it's sort of something that they pass through. I don't know if it's really explained well in the anime, or if you just have to, if it's just inferred through like other things, or like if you read the Wikipedia, extra people like read other stuff about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's another show. I don't think it's based on a manga or anything.
Really?
Yeah. But the I think the gimmick is that there are two planets that are that close together, and that the Grand Stream is this like is the com where those two atmospheres meet, like they're that close, like it's that weird. And so each kingdom is on each planet or something.
Interesting.
It's, I mean, it's all science fiction-y, and that's sort of what right. the end is. It's the Trigun thing, which is why Trigun's so awesome, because it basically says, hey, so Earth got haywire, and then there was a bunch of different ships with people, and they all went different things, and one of them made Trigun. And one of them made Last Exile, let's say. You know, why not? Like, and then maybe one of them made Outlaw Star. I mean, who cares? You know, I mean, they know of Earth or they don't. They're in an imaginary world, and if they feel like explaining that it's imaginary world, that's it. Why not, you know? So that's their sci-fi angle on it, I guess.
That's pretty cool.
I mean, yeah, I mean, basically what I want from most shows is action, but not dumb action, like earned action, awesome action, characters that are cool, and then just set pieces and stuff that happen in an awesome way. And I mean, right from the get-go, that's what Last Exile gives you. It gives you the fleet battle. An airship fleet battle, like right then and there, it happens. It's happening like 2 minutes into the show. There's stuff going on. You don't necessarily know what's going on because it's not holding your hand about it. It's not a huge amount of exposition. You just kind of have to watch it and be curious and be questioning, like, why are some of these things ejecting from the ships? And you won't learn about that till later on. I'm going to ask the guild to stop this. Like, what's the guild? How come they have power to stop this or not? You know, it was almost like and then, you know, all that stuff happens with these characters, and you see that there's a bigger dramatic thing happening that's beyond their lives. It's just these couriers, just these two kids trying to make a living. They got their little house and their cool little imaginative little city, you know, and little world that they live in, where, you know, the buildings are built into the sides of these canyons and these grassy slopes, and it's all very kind of oddly pastoral and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And the music is reflective of that. It's kind of like, hey, it's adventure, and it's it's fun, right? We're having fun,
right.
But then it's also kind of crazy, and you're seeing that the kids juxtaposed with like the seriousness of the war being told through the musket soldier who's sitting there telling doing his mantra about how he's not going to get killed, and then see how many of them get killed, you know, and then you get that awesome scene where they raise the. You know, the little thing where they were all standing out and all the bodies are just sloughing off.
Yeah.
And it's brutal, but not like gratuitously violent or anything. So it's not like, oh, the point of this was to show violence. It was like, no, the point of this was to show, like, that's what that was, what they did. They had like this very, very refined form of war, but it's still just as gruesome and terrible.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the kids get involved in that. And then they disappear. Then they go back home, and their biggest concern was getting into this race.
Mm-hmm.
And they got there late, so they didn't get to qualify. But then the next episode is the race, and you're like, okay. And the race is fun. It's like the pod race from Star Wars or whatever. Except I enjoy it a lot more than the pod race from Star Wars. Or whatever. I think it's just more fun to see what happens. But you're seeing this. But at the same time, it's not like giving you, well, what about all that other stuff?
Yeah.
It pretty much starts with, oh, well, there's something going on. Somebody's chasing somebody. Somebody's shooting after somebody, at somebody about something. It's very small now. It's not a big, epic fleet again, because they started with that. So where are they going to go? They're going to do something small, but there's intrigue. And then that ends up connecting with the race, so you get the fun race, and you get to see the little world.
And what's the guild kid's name?
Dio. He doesn't show up until the fifth episode.
And what's his name?
The sixth, maybe.
Well, he was in the race.
Luciola.
Yeah,
you know, no. He's there are two races. That's why this show is awesome. The first race is just a regular
old race where you
get to see, you get kind of introduced to the community and their world and how they've lived so far, and then everything changes at the end of that race when they run into, you know, one of the ships, the little starships, little guild ships, and, you know, that guy dies and sacrifices himself, and you think that things are taken care of, and then the only episode that's even remotely kind of slow follows, which is the fourth episode. And that episode's just kind of them with this girl who's kind of another anime trope, you know, the cute little girl that doesn't know what's going on and why does she need to be protected and what is magical. And you're like, roll your eyes, but whatever. Like, so far, the other stuff in the show is cool, and I'm going to keep watching it and see what happens. And then that ship comes after him. Again, it didn't get blown up, you know? No, it's relentless. And then the ending of that fourth episode is exciting again and cool, and it's like desperate where they're trying to get to a location to meet this mysterious dude that I don't think you know that's Alex Rowe at the beginning, do you?
You've seen him,
but you don't know that's who they, when they say, oh, we're supposed to deliver her to Alex Rowe in the third episode, you don't know that's who that is. I don't think
you do. Maybe. I did.
Let me say the Sylvana, and I think they did mention that, yes, they had this fight in the second episode.
Yeah.
So you do kind of put the pieces together. Anyway, so by the end of the fourth episode, boom, the kids are now getting connected to the bigger world through the awesome ship that you were shown at the very beginning of the show. It's like, just like, there's the economy of storytelling, which anime seems to screw up so much. Sometimes it must be from manga, maybe it's differences in culture and stuff, but it's just so tight in this show. Like, there's no, like, filler episodes. There's no, like, a large amount of stuff where you're like, I don't care about these characters. There's not, like, a huge amount of... There's comedic moments, but it's not, like, a comedic relief that takes time out from moving the story along. Everything just happens for a reason. And it's exciting, and it's set in such a cool way. So they meet up with Alex Rowe at the end of the fourth episode, and then the show gets started proper. And you're only four episodes in, and the show's gotten started proper. It hasn't taken half the episodes to get things going. It's like, there. Mm-hmm. And then it's good. And then it becomes a different situation, and the kids have to start to grow up, and they have to... I mean, the whole situation with Klaus being determined to find Al and make sure she's okay... And then getting on the ship and then getting beaten up by the mechanics to the point where, like, he passes out and stuff. Because, I mean, it's kind of like a lesson he's learning about, like, being cocky and arrogant or something. And then, you know, then you get that second race when it's really just an excuse for them to get some information. And they bring up the term exile. So you're like, oh, well, that connects to the show. And then what's the main purpose of the show? So you're getting all that stuff answered within, like, the first eight episodes. And that's cool. Or not really in the first eight. I guess that second part is more like in the first... Basically, by the end of the first half of the show, a lot of awesome stuff's happened. You've already had the politics where his own people have come after him with the airships. Mm-hmm. And you have an overwhelming odds thing and stuff collapses.
I don't think I ever fully understood what The Last Exile was.
It's the ship. It's the ship. It's the seed ship from Trigon.
Okay.
It's the ship that brought humans to this strange dual world.
What is it that they're bidding on, though? Like, when they had this
They're bidding on nothing.
Yeah.
It's a MacGuffin. It's a red herring. They're bidding on information. But the people in the know are bidding on information. All those other people, the idle rich or something, are just there for. It's the commentary, which they do in anime a lot whenever there's nobility and royalty. It's the commentary on the ridiculousness of that, which is done through the eighth episode when the cowardly guy, like, challenges Alex Rowe, and then they immediately follow that up with his father coming after him and stuff. But yeah, it's mainly just like, what's her name? Delphina.
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 Yeah.
Delphina knows about what it is, and Ro knows what it is. And so, and that's what it's awesome too, because then it just keeps going with him. Like, he quietly, and one guy's like, you're not bidding on anything here so far. And then that comes out, and the music kicked up, and you're like, finally you hear the term exile, and you're like, okay, they're going to start answering some questions. And that's when Alex Rowe steps up and starts saying things. And then that bidding gets insane, where it ends up in billions. And you're like, this is cool. And that's happening while they're having a race inside of a hollowed up cave. and that's also cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then things just keep escalating, and they're like, with the politics of what's going on, with the one emperor and stuff. I mean, it's just the economy of the storytelling is so solid. There's no episode that feels wasteful.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, it's relying on things that have been done before in other anime, like, Captain Harlock and Nadia, The Secret of Blue Water, and I mean, there's other shows with ships and with captains and with things happening. But as a whole, it's just, to me, it's well put together. It's well structured.
Yeah.
It's just so much fun to watch because, like, basically the beginning, if you partition it into like four or five parts. I don't think there's a single part that's particularly boring. Maybe the fourth part where it's got the flashback episode and a couple of episodes where people just kind of get moved about and pieces are kind of moved into position.
Mm-hmm.
But even those are still pretty cool. I mean, the flashback episode is good. It happens at the right time and in the right way to kind of give you information about the two characters and how they ended up where they ended up.
I don't know if it's just because I haven't watched it in a while. Or what, but it doesn't seem like you got a lot of info about Alex Rowe.
No.
His background. which kind of bothered me a little bit because he's, you know, the captain of this awesome ship and supposed to be like the super badass.
Yeah.
And he's like, he's pretty stoic most of the time. And you never like actually see him. I mean, he does like a good job of captaining the ship, but you don't actually see him like, I wanted to like see him like go out and, you know, one of those little ships and, you know, totally kick a bunch of ass. And, like,
oh, you wanted
super,
him in a van ship?
Yeah, you know, and be, like, super good at flying around, just, like, blow everyone away and everything, and then be like, oh, well, that's why Alex was so amazing, because he can, you know, outmaneuver anybody or anything.
No.
You know?
He can do more than just walk with a cane.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think...
You know, you never had that, like, super triumphal moment.
Yeah, that is the tough part. I agree with you there. I think in terms of his character and his backstory, they were pretty awesome about it. There's a little bit of telling, you know, there's the, you know, when he runs into what's his name? When he runs into Spike and with the warship coffee and it's like, we haven't seen each other since,
right.
You know, so you know that they went to school together.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the flashback episode, you get all the information that's like, oh, you understand why he's a captain and you understand on some level why they kind of let him do what he wants because he was the guy that was on, the only guy that returned from that mission. He had been, you know, 20 years ago or whatever, had been, you know, almost to exile and had been in the grand stream in a van ship. And that had changed him, you know. He had been hurt, you know, he had, you know, his eye and his leg or whatever else was wrong with him. And it had kind of turned him into a slightly, like you said, more stoic person that wasn't going to give people little bears and stuff or whatever, little yaks that make noises when they fall over. Which is like high-end, like, electronics or something. I don't know how they do.
And the other part is he just gets, he gets captured.
Yeah.
And he's going through the Rose treatment.
Yeah, the Rose treatment. That's awesome, though, too, because, like, he set the situation up such that if he were captured, he, I mean, that's always cool when people do that, when people have that much, like, they know they're a badass, but they're also that, like, aware to be like, you know what, I can't have all of this information, because if I get captured, stuff could happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then he's getting tortured and everything, and I thought he was going to battle Delfina.
Yeah, you thought it'd be something, some kind of cool element to it.
Because they're supposed to be super warriors.
Yeah.
But instead he just, like, chokes her real quick. He's like, see ya, bitch. And then he walks out on the ship. He's like, well, guess I'm screwed.
He's trapped there. Yeah, that all happens, like, really fast at the end. I was disappointed in that on some level because I was just loving... I mean, basically, they introduce Alex Rowe. He does something super awesome.
Mm-hmm.
He takes that ship out, one bullet, one shot, nothing to it. And that ship had just caused havoc in the last two episodes. Mm-hmm. No one could do anything to take it out. They could slam it against a wall. They could blow it up, whatever. It didn't do anything to it. Where I guess I get that they all... I never had a problem with him as a captain, though. I feel like as a captain, you understand that, like, he lets people do what they want for the most part, and it's pretty quiet, and so, like, you know, it's the ne'er-do-wells on the Sylvana, but they're generally the most competent, too, you know, because they're, you know, they're rough and tumble, but then he will defend things. You know, the guy throws the glove at him, and it's like, it's a challenge. It's like, okay, we have to do this. He, you know, he would have just as soon walked away from everything, played times over, but...
Mm-hmm.
That guy did that, so he had to do that. And then when he's being taken on with all the other airships, I mean, that's where you know that he is an awesome captain, basically. Because he has his little plan, Vince figures out his plan, and then he has to be like, okay, now what kind of a tactician, what kind of a, like, how are you going to solve a problem when you've got, the odds are like 5-1 against you, and you're boxed in.
Yeah.
And he, as a captain, he treats his ship like it's a body, and he treats the other ships like they're bodies, and he fights like it's a hand-to-hand combat situation with airships in, like, a giant craggy mountain range, and it's awesome. It's just so cool to see that. I mean, it's so awesome that they even comment on it in the show. You know, Klaus just sees it, and he's like, that was amazing. he figures out how to do that. You know, he's like, let's just slow down. Let's stop. Let's do this. Let's fire this now. Let's go faster now. Engines full. And he just, I mean, you know, he grabs one ship and body slams it into another ship and then slams two other ships together. And he takes out 4 of the 5 ships. So that justifies him being like an awesome captain.
Yeah.
You're right.
You get the sense that he's really good.
Once he gets captured, you're kind of like, well, he's going to have to get away, and then something awesome's going to happen, and then when that doesn't happen, I mean, that's like, to me, that's like the one bittersweet component of it. But, and another friend of mine who I recommended the show to saw it, and he's like, yeah, at the end, he's like, wow, you're like, you really get, he really hated her. Because it's like, it's not romanticized, it's not like awesome actiony. It, in retrospect, it's almost like the best way for him to have gone out, and for that whole thing with him and Delphine to have been resolved, was just straight up brutality. He just grabs her by the throat and chokes the life out of her with his bare hands. And it's like, yeah, he really hated her that much. And he was done, you know, like, I mean, he was damaged goods. That was what you got from the princess and stuff too.
Yeah.
Is that he wasn't going to connect with people anymore. He was just starting to lose it. He was angry. He was that angry and stuff. So I like that they didn't keep him stoic the whole time, you know, that they had moments where he's like, you know, has guilt and has anger and stuff. And, you know, the characters, other characters argue and they go through stuff. And the Musketeer soldier has his whole little arc where he is kind of a wimp, but then you know, kind of stands up for himself and does what he does. So I don't know, all in all, like, I mean, that's why I just like the show, because it's just so watchable, and it's just so, like, there's never a moment when I can think, I mean, basically, in order to really like a show, like an anime show, generally they're finite, and hopefully they've got a beginning, middle, and an end in terms of decent storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
And in a show like Last Exile, all the parts are good, all the parts are fun. It's not like, you know what, I think I want to rewatch that. I'll watch like 5 now because the beginning is really slow, and then I'll get into where it gets better. It's like, no, it's like, I'll just watch 2 because in Last Exile, they're almost all fun to watch. They're almost all good to watch, and you can get a little bit of new stuff to it. It's not a super dense show there, but there's enough going on with stuff. It is well animated. It's well realized. It's got it's pure imagination in terms of the design and in terms of everything. I mean, the ships have never really existed. They made them up. They had to design those. I mean, then they based a lot of stuff, you know, like off biplanes, and they based like the cities off of, you know, Victorian era Germany or whatever. But like they weren't built in canyons in Victorian era Germany. So I mean, yeah, that's my take on that show. But
it's pretty good. Yeah, it's good.
And yeah, I agree with you. It is kind of a dissatisfying thing with Ro. You kind of wanted at least one more awesome moment out of him.
Yeah.
And it's not awesome, but maybe for the dramatic purposes of what it is, it's kind of right.
Yeah.
I don't know. You haven't said much. Maybe this isn't a girl's show. I don't know.
It was entertaining. It was action-packed, but I prefer shows where there's a deeper character dilemma.
Dilemma?
And there's not really.
Yeah, it's true. It is kind of just a straight-up conflict between... I mean, you have the... We didn't talk much yet about the guild, which is this idea of, like, the upper class.
Yeah.
Where there's the nobles on their kingdoms, and then there's the regular poor people
there
who have to drink filthy
water.
There are
a few episodes, or maybe it's only one. Maybe one or two.
They go to the guild for, like, 3 episodes, yeah. And
okay.
You see that world realized, yeah.
To Dio, and, like, how he became who he was. And
yeah.
He was basically brainwashed. And that whole part is really sad, and then the way that Luciola dies is really sad.
Yeah, it's sad, and there's character stuff there.
But it's not like there's a big conflict inside, like internal.
Yeah.
You know, conflict. Like that's what I enjoy. That's why Trigun's my favorite, because you have a deep emotional, moral, internal conflict.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of pondering on that.
That's what I appreciate. So I enjoy the show as an action, but I wouldn't be able to rewatch it.
Oh.
Because there's nothing more to learn there. Whereas with each viewing of Trigun, I learned something a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's mostly a revenge story for Alex Rowe. It's a coming-of-age story for Klaus and Lavi. It's... I mean, I don't know. Dio character is kind of complex in that sense, though, because he's sort of a goofy kid that's sort of a homicidal maniac, and then he kind of sees that there can be something more, and then there's sort of a fatalism to him. The princess has to grow up a little bit
he
too.
Dies in Grand Stream.
Yeah, the princess has to grow up a little, and she ends up kind of getting over her little childish infatuation with the captain, becoming like a head of state, and that's, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, you're right. There's no, it, you know what it is. It's it's more of an ensemble show than something like Trigun, where you're right. I mean, I don't think that's a fault of Last Exile, that it doesn't have a character constantly going, should I do this? Should I not do this? Like, at that conflict.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just, it's less, I mean, Trigun is about Vash and his thing. And every other character is a side character. I mean, Millie and Meryl are side characters. The Preacher is the closest thing to maybe kind of a second official character. I mean, Knives is in it so little, which, I mean, is sort of a fair criticism, because you could really have that debate more between the two of them if there was more with Knives and stuff. But yeah, Last Exile is definitely not as character-driven, I guess. The characters work, though, so...
Yeah.
That would be... You're right, that would make it a much worse show if the characters didn't work, or if they were all just one-dimensional, or if their motivations weren't somehow spelled out in some respect, you know? But I think that they do that, so... That's
why it's good as, like, far as, like, what you're saying. I mean, obviously, you like it because it's action-packed.
Well, no, but I like it because, like, I care about what happens with the characters, too, you know? I mean, I get their motivations, and the imagination is just... of the world is just so fun. It's fun to watch it. It's fun to be immersed in the story of watching it, you know? And that's my thing with that show.
Yeah. To me, the character that touched me the most was Dio and Lucio, because they were the ones that, I mean, even though they were, like, side characters, and, like, not that important, like, the whole thing, they were just the ones that were... totally innocent and then corrupted by the guild, and then they just get, you know, they just die at the end. There's like no redemption for them.
They're just fodder
anything. Yeah, they just kind of just get...
Well, I think Luciola kind of wheels. Luciola kind of gets, I mean, he makes that choice at the end, and so, I mean, there's sort of some, I don't know if it's redemption necessarily. I don't think he necessarily needs the redemption, because he was kind of always just doing what he was doing. But yeah,
Dio's the one that just gets thrown off the plane.
Yeah, Dio just jumps off the plane or whatever, but that makes sense too, because it's like, you know, you were part of this system, and whether you had a choice in it or not, sometimes that isn't what matters. It is kind of a brutal thing, just like with Alex Rowe. It's kind of brutal, and I like that it does that. It's not pure happy endings. It's not everybody gets revenge and then gets to marry the pretty girl and be happy. It's like some guys get beat up and people change, and you know, it's not all storybook at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's what makes it fun.
It's pretty entertaining. Stylistically, the airships did bother me a little bit.
Yes, that is one of the earlier shows with the first integration of CG stuff into 2D. I noticed it a lot more when I first started watching it, but as I've watched it more and more, it just blends in. I just don't care. It doesn't bother me as much.
Yeah, it's one of those things I can dismiss quickly.
Yeah. It doesn't stand out too much, you know?
No. From a technical aspect, the reason it looks kind of weird is because this is kind of like a boring technical note. But there's two kinds of like methods of animation.
Yeah.
And one is you create the model with, you know, your polygons and everything, and then you can either the simplest method is to just throw a texture onto that model that you've mapped out.
Yeah.
And so the texture is on there, but the texture that is on there is not inherently 3D. It's just a texture on a 3D surface.
Yeah.
And the more realistic way to do it is where the actual texture has 3D properties to it. So like the corrugated metal actually would be 3D protruding out of the ship and reacting with the light and the shadows.
Exactly.
And that's how earlier video games were. Like if you've ever, you know, played maybe the first, like, Call of Duty, like, all of the walls and everything were just, you know, pretty much these square buildings or these really simple geometric shapes with textures slapped onto them.
Instead of the 3D textures.
And then as, you know, technology progressed, they were able to do, like, real 3D textures that interacted with light and shadow more and made it look more convincing.
And in Last Exile, the van ships and stuff are the latter, they're the old technology, the newer technology.
Yeah, which, you know, it's fine. It's like a little...
No, but you're right, it's not, not as quality. And this is timely that we're doing this podcast now, because it was recently announced that they're going to do, I don't know if they're going to remake the show, I kind of hope they don't remake the show, I kind of hope they just do another story in that world, but that they're going to do more Last Exile.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so, I mean, but in the press release about it had something to do with, they mentioned 3D stuff and stuff, and I thought, oh boy, I just hope it's not all like 3D animation. I mean, I hope it's like the old show where you know, they do the ships or whatever, and then they can make those look a lot better now because it's 8 years later or whatever.
Yeah, Matt's coming over.
Cool. He's gonna come here.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is awesome. We timed it perfectly. I feel like that's a good way to end it. We could do stars, right? So let's do stars for... Let's do stars for... We got four things we talked about. We talked about Helsing the anime and Helsing the OAV. And then we talked about Escaflowne, and then we talked about Last Exile. So first, Helsing the anime, the 13-episode anime. How many stars? Out of five.
Okay.
That's because it's a cheat, you know? Because you never give anything a five.
Right.
Ever, usually.
So Helsing the 13-episode?
Yeah, the 13.
I'll give it 3.8 stars.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah, I would give it... I'll give it 3.5 stars.
3.5? I'll give it a 3, because... He's kind of super powered till the end, and then when it gets good, the show ends.
Right.
The OAV, I'll give a 3.5.
I'll give it a 4 out of 5.
You give the OAV a 4? You guys both give it a 4? Mm-hmm. Okay. So clearly I'm more discriminating taste here.
Yeah. Let's see how many you can last eggs out.
Yeah, yeah. I know. Right. Escaflowne, I give it 3 out of 5. 3.5.
I'll give it...
I'd give it a 3.
Yeah, I'd probably give it a 3. Maybe like a 2.9.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Maybe 3.5 is too high. You guys are convincing me that...
Well, I would give it a 3. I'm going to stick with a solid 3, because the animation is good, and the music is...
Yeah,
the thing about Escaflowne, that's...
You don't like the music?
No, it's incredible.
Sometimes it's tough to tell when someone makes a certain face and then shakes their head if you can't hear what they're saying. Like,
it's
incredible.
Incredible
or
the music is fantastic. Well,
that's one of the few series where I'd, like, actually take the soundtrack and just listen to it.
Yeah, no, the soundtrack is... It's a weird soundtrack to listen to. I've built a mix of that soundtrack where I just kind of make it, like, condensed into adventure, you know?
I'm one of those weird people that, like, listen to, like, movie soundtracks.
No, that's not weird. I do the same thing, so we're both weird. Yeah, you know what? You're right. Three for Escaflowne, because there are some tedious points in that show where, you know, you had to muddle through it. So, yeah, three is better than 3.5. 3.5 is a little too high for that. The Last Exile, I'll give... I probably ought to give it a 4.
Yeah.
I'm
going
to give it a 4, just because, like I said, the economy of storytelling, the motivations of all the characters, the imagination of the design and the animation quality to a degree. You're right, the CG stuff stands out. It was a little bit of a sore thumb, but it's like a diminished sore thumb.
Yeah, you pretty much kind of forget about it when you're like...
Well, you get involved in it because the storytelling is so good and the action is so quick that you're just like, okay, things are happening. I'm not just drawn to it.
Right.
It doesn't draw attention to itself after a while. It does at the beginning just because that's what you're looking at. But
right. I'll give it a 3.
3?
Mm-hmm.
Same as Escaflowne.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd give it a 3.
Okay, then. We'll keep on keeping on, people.
Reluctant
3? Yeah, reluctant 3. I was thinking 2.5, but...
Wow, yeah. It's got to have a character that just constantly, every single episode, is just like, should I kill or not kill? Him, ha, I'm going to eat some donuts. Heaven forbid that, like, awesome stuff happen in the back. No, stop.
Just because I'm not into airships, for pity's sake.
Yeah, well, airships are awesome. How can you not be into airships?
They're pretty cool.
Just because it's awesome airships does not mean I'm going to give it 4 stars.
No, that's true. Trinity Blood, like, I would give probably like a 2.5 because of the awesome airships that are in a few places. Like, I'll watch that show again because of the awesome
airships. Last Halloween, we saw this couple dressed up as, like, these steampunk characters.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, like, really, really pro. They had, like, these awesome...
People go too far with
that stuff,
man.
They had, like, goggles and these awesome hats and these awesome guns, but it was, like, really pro-manufactured and, like, not stuff you could just buy. This was, like, professional cosplay stuff.
Wow. Yeah. Well, more power to them, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. It was pretty...
I just have always felt like that particular kind of weird fake faux genre...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I like 5 or 6... I mainly like stuff based on genre. For anime or for most anything, you know, I like the noir detective.
Mm-hmm.
I like the steampunk. I like the cyberpunk. And, you know, it's all just like an excuse. Like, what's the excuse to make stuff happen, and how is it going to unfold in a situation? Like for Speedgrapher, like, the one thing I can kind of latch on to now a little is it's got a little bit of a, like, dark detective noir thing to it, maybe. And, I mean, it all depends on how that will resolve. At this point, they've done a lot more with, like, the bad guy than I thought they would.
Love
at
the
beginning.
Bad guy.
That weird guy with the white hair and the glasses.
The ending of it is fantastic, I think. It's the only anime I've seen that ends this way.
Oh, that ends the way it ends? Mm-hmm. Is the ending...
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Better than...
He's got, like, the coolest power.
Yeah. Oh, you haven't even seen his power yet. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
I'll probably...
Yes.
I would probably be interested... to see it kind of conclude. I mean, it's got Piccolo doing the voice of the main guy, which is nice. Piccolo from Dragon Ball Z. he's the photographer. He's the photographer that can't believe that he gets all excited about violence or whatever, or photographing the violence. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, he gets all. Right. Yeah, the sexy stuff. Yeah, it's like, what is going on with this show?
Yeah,
this is kind of a hard R show here, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is. Well, but they really ramp it up the first episode. The rest of the show is not.
Yeah, it's they lead with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that can turn people off. It kind
of
like, makes me like...
It seems like a constant theme in anime is a lot of tongue action, a lot of licking, and
yeah, it's gross
stuff. Lot of saliva going around.
You know you're a bad guy if you're licking your sword.
That happens a lot.
Or your victim.
Yeah, no kidding.
I'll have to lend that to you.
Yeah, yeah, I'll make some room for something like that at some point.
It's one of my favorites simply because of the ending and the bad guy.
No, is the ending the sort of thing that's like just happens in the last two episodes, or like does the show arc towards this ending you say is awesome? Like, does it get awesome progressively as that ending approaches? Or you know what I mean? Like how some shows like I don't know. There's a show called Gun X Sword that's kind of derivative of a lot of things,
mm-hmm.
but I found that like when I got to like the last three or four episodes, well maybe more like to be fair, maybe like the last five. It got kind of cool, and then the ending is awesome.
Yeah.
The ending is awesome because it's like the guy does what he says he's going to do, you know? Despite you as a viewer kind of even seeing the villain in multiple facets,
mm-hmm.
like the one guy is driven by revenge still just does what he does at the end, and you're kind of like, oh, yeah, it didn't affect him.
Yeah.
He just took care of that guy. Okay, fine, awesome. And that kind of makes me feel like, yeah, that gets extra points if something ends strong. So,
yeah, I feel like this one really ends strong. Just because I think it's the only one I've seen here this way.
But that happens, but like I said, that the show kind of is fortified by that or justified?
I think so, because there's a build-up between the bad guy and there's a connection in the past between the bad guy and the protagonist.
And the photographer?
And that you sort of, you know, gradually get led into. He's beaten off all these
yeah.
other guys in the meantime, like the rubber band man.
Who? Yeah, okay, so he'll enter. Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. So seeing the first three episodes is kind of just doing like a decent bit of setup. You know what bothered me about it though, and I thought about this and thought that maybe that wasn't a problem, is that when they swim out to that buoy in like the third episode, he never offers her his coat. She's wearing almost no clothes out in the freezing cold. But then I thought, well, his coat's soaking wet, so
yeah,
maybe it wouldn't be.
She would drown.
Yeah.
She weighs like nothing.
Yeah.
She probably weighs the same amount as the coat.
Yeah. I was kind of like, why? Well, even earlier on, before they're in the water, I'm like, why wouldn't you just give her your coat, man? Come on, just. No one needs to see this. Come on. I'm a little kid. I did like the way the structure of the first two episodes, though. They sort of did like his story, then her story, how they interconnect, and then...
Yeah.
And that was interesting. And so... Do they introduce more, like, protagonist characters, sort of, to help this guy? Or is it pretty much just him versus the world?
Yes.
I mean, that female cop is kind of... I don't know, I could take her leave her. I hope, it would be cool if they killed her in the halfway just to kind of raise the action or something, because she's kind of terrible.
She's too weird.
She's
weird. I don't like her at all.
No, she's
But you're not supposed to, I don't think, you know?
Yeah, she's one of those, though, that's like, she's helping and she's hindering. She's both.
Yeah.
And then they do add another guy, a doctor, and he helps. But mostly it's just them running.
Yeah. Okay. No, I mean, there's just that little bit with the main character that kind of like just a sort of like depression and anger and whatnot and seeing the terrible things that he's seen kind of thing.
Yeah.
It kind of, I mean, thematically, I think I might be able to get behind it. I mean, they did that thing with the kid when the kid took the dollar bill from his dad who had all the money stacked up.
Yeah,
and then the kid comes running back and then the guy tells him, you know, like, remember my name and you're gonna need a lot of money if you want to be able to get.
Mm-hmm.
To do anything to me. So, I mean, yeah, some of that stuff is a little on the nose and stuff. It's not quite hammy, but we'll see.
Yeah.
I just don't... It's 26, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it sustains that? Like it complicates things enough and it doesn't...
I thought so. Did you?
I'm really grilling you about this. I should just watch the show.
Like, enough characters... enter that he has to defeat and everything that keeps
and it's
it interesting.
Clever enough, it doesn't just feel like the character of the week, character of the episode kind of mm-hmm. thing.
There's a, like, develops, like, sort of this weird, like, romantic tension between him and the little girl, which is kind of weird.
Well, yeah, that's the big weird. That's the big moe thing, is the term I think in Japan. Right? it's the older males, like, sort of twisted pseudo perverted desire to protect the young helpless girl, despite his own.
God, yeah. Damn it, that was a perfect. That's his favorite line from it.
Oh. There's a scene where they're on the train.
Oh, there's trains? Well, you just have to tell me there's trains. Trains and airships. And, there's no airships, probably.
And she's like, that strange man over there tickled me. He's like, damn, that was a pervert.
He's like, rewind it.
There's always one bit quiet out of every anime.
Yeah, there should be, right? Yeah. Think about it. I think the good one from Last Exile is just that gunshot in the fourth episode.